Yes, guys, what's good? You tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima.
Hey, everybody.
And today, I don't know what's in the air, Mercury's in retrograde or something, but everything's all over the place.
Is it? You're getting a bit flustered, Carlos.
Well, I am, but first of all, Halima's just come into the studio and is laughing her head off because I'm dressed as if I'm in Barbados.
Guys, I've just walked in and he's in like a sleeveless vest. And, like, I came in a coat. Do you know what I mean? Like, to be fair, it is quite warm in the studio, which I'm very thankful for. But, like, I just didn't expect him to look like he is, as he said, like, on holiday in Barbados. But.
Told you, it's called the power of manifesting. Do you know what I mean?
I think he was just hot and sweating, that's why.
Well, that too. But, no, I got this. I got this for when I went to Greece and I didn't actually end up getting to wear it, so I was like,
you do
you know
love
what?
A little towel texture, don't
I
you?
I love. I'm slowly but surely changing all of my stuff to towel.
Really?
Just because I just prefer it so
soaks
much.
Soaks up your sweat.
I mean, that's an additional element to it, but also it's just so much more comfortable, and I just find that. I don't know. I think because I've got to wearing it now, I just feel so much more comfortable in it. Like I feel like I can just. It's being myself, and also it's my trademark.
It's like when you wear Crocs, like it's so comfy, you just can't go back to other shoes. We've had this conversation several times, haven't we?
Yeah.
It's kind of that.
Are you wearing Crocs right now?
Carlos, of course I am.
Well, fake ones, but.
Oh, yeah. No, mine are real.
Wow.
The real Crocs.
But other stuff that's different that isn't normally different, but then you still found a way to make it still the same.
Yeah.
Basically, first of all, today, Halima was going to be going on a hike with her family, which I presume was the weather that disrupted that.
Oh, yeah. My God. When we planned this hike, guys, it was 22 degrees. It was forecasted to be 22 degrees. And we were like, you know what? Like, we're back to it, baby. Like, first hike of the year. Come on, let's go. Because obviously, I speak on the show a lot. Like, me and my family work to hike quite a lot. And, like, in the summertime, that's one of our favorite things to do. And, like, we planned on for this year. So, we planned on for today. We were so happy, so excited. Like, it's the first one of the year. And gradually, as the week has gone on, the weather, the temperature has been... So first, the forecast was just sun. No clouds, sun, 22 degrees. I was like, this is going to be the best of my life. Then gradually, the clouds come out. And then gradually, the temperature gets lower and lower and lower. And then this morning, we checked it, and it's even forecasted to rain.
Yeah.
And we thought, forget it.
It peaked on Thursday, I will say. Thursday was really nice.
Thursday was nice. Wednesday was really nice as well, actually. Mm. Like, we had some nice days this
We'll give it that.
Yeah.
But anyway, Halima had this hike planned. So then it was like, okay, let's like try and do a bit more talking towards the beginning of the episode. And then towards the end, we can play music and you can shoot off, do your hike, whatever. But then obviously you messaged like this morning, like, okay, plans have changed. Let's just do it as normal. So I was like, okay, cool, whatever. And then in around 1:30, I get a text from Halima saying, oh, I'm parked outside the studio, just let me know when you need me to come up. Which, if you listen to the show, you know that's an extremely rare, happened before, in the past like 3-4 years. Never happened.
You know what I said to Carlos when I said to him, like, oh, by the way, like, I'm gonna have to go early, but like, I'll come early and like, we'll start straight at 2.
But the thing is, that's what it's meant to.
That's what we're meant to do. But like, no, it's because I said to you then, like, oh, do you know what? I'm trying to fix my sleeping pattern.
Yeah.
So, like, do you know what? I will be able to make it. And like,
but in all honesty, I read that. And I was like, pinch your soul.
Yeah, you know, like, I know. I don't blame you. But like, I did. I got up and I got ready. And I was like, basically, I needed to make a phone call. So I was like, if I stay at home and make the phone call, I'm 1,000,000% going to be late. Whereas if I just go and make it outside, I can just come up whenever.
You know what, Halima? Whatever combination of your ADHD meds or whatever pattern you're doing. Because honestly, when you said that, I was like, wait. You're thinking like how you're meant to think. Like,
yeah,
what's going
you know what?
On?
Like, my friend that I was on the phone to, he literally was like, oh, so you know how to be on time when you want to.
No, I was like, this is like, that's exact. Like, I was like,
he was like, oh, you know how to do it.
It's mad because obviously it's like, it's a basic thing to a lot of people.
Yeah,
but then it was the fact that when you were thinking it, I was like, what is going on?
Especially
when you said, like, oh, like, I knew I had to take this call, so I got here early and I was like, who are you and what have you done with the real Halima?
Yeah.
Like, what imposter
but
is
it's because
this?
I woke up, basically what usually tends to happen, because my sleeping pattern is obviously trash, like, I usually don't wake up till very late, and then I like rush and get ready and then I come here. But like, it's because today, like, I woke up in good time and like, I had time to get ready and then come.
What was it like to actually hear the bird song when you're waking up rather than going to
bed? Oh, it wasn't that early. It wasn't that early, gosh. But it feels good, you know? Like, I can't remember earlier this week, like, I had like an appointment somewhere. It was a doctor's appointment and I was up early. And it's happened a handful of times in my life where I've been up early and I've been out. And every single time I do, I'm like, wow, like maybe I wouldn't have the problems in my life that I have if this was my everyday reality.
The thing is, I'm not on your level, but I do get it. I find it. I will have that days where like I wake up and I get so much more done when I'm awake early. And
it just feels good, like especially when you go out.
It does feel good. It's just sometimes
the morning air is different, you know.
I think the hard thing is keeping it consistent, like doing it more than a couple of times a week or something.
Yeah,
but
that's always my problem: consistency with everything. God.
Yeah, but I don't know. This is the first time in 3 or 4 years this has happened. Maybe this is a new chapter.
I'm trying to change, guys. Come on, I'm trying to be a new person. I'm trying to, like, everything starts with sleep. You know,
very important.
It is very important.
And I say that partial sarcasm, partially, like, it is very important. Like, even Bianca, my wife, she is like, has very admirable qualities in the way that she can like wake up and just get stuff done, and even when she's really tired she can do it. But then I do worry because she sometimes will, like, even when she goes to bed really late, she'll wake up and they'll just get on with it, and I'm like, that's a great quality to have in terms of having to do it once every often. But the fact that it then becomes a regular occurrence, I'm like, you aren't getting enough sleep. Like, you need to rest more.
It's like, and you know what, especially recent studies, have you seen like where they've found out that, you know, the 8-hour benchmark that they found that humans need, that study was actually done on men, and they've redone it on women and found that actually women, because of like our hormone cycles and stuff like that, women need an optimal amount of 9 to 10 hours.
Which is mad, because I think most people would associate sleeping with laziness and men. I think they would associate it with that.
Yeah. Women that need more sleep.
Yeah. But I think, again, I think society has progressed in a way that just, like, I think with menstrual cycles are a perfect example of how women have kind of just been forced to adjust.
Yeah, we just have to just fit to this a man-built world. Exactly.
Whereas, really, like, I think, like, the idea of having, like, a couple of days off a month, like, for when you're on your period, I don't think that's a perfectly reasonable thing that should be in society. Like, if I was, going through that, once every month...
I think that all the time. Like, I think, like, is half, like, or nearly half the world's population going through this, and there are absolutely no mechanisms in place to, like, accommodate for that.
It's like how people say that if men could get pregnant, then we would have figured out, like,
birth control
would be free everywhere, that sort of thing. But, yeah, that's where we are at. Now, today's episode, I will say Halima was sending stuff throughout the whole week, and I was like, okay.
Oh, it was just a very interesting news week, guys. Like, just stuff just kept coming up, and I was like, God, I need to say something about this. It's going to be a long segment of...
Wow.
Bad Vibes Island.
Carlos, that was more tone deaf than usual.
Right.
That was awful, Carlos.
You know what, though? You clearly don't go and listen back to Manga Masala on Spotify like lovely listeners do.
God.
Because if you listen back, you'll see that it drowns me out, so it actually doesn't matter.
No, like, I know, but I've had to hear it live and direct. That was awful.
AJ Tracy live and direct.
What
do you want to discuss first? I mean, I've got 5 things here that you posted. You know what? Shall we ease into things first? Do something that's a little bit less serious. Well, still serious, but less serious than some other stuff. Have you seen about the co-op arena?
Oh, my God. So basically, guys, I went to a stand-up comedy show yesterday in Manchester. It's actually really good. It's the first time I went in Manchester. I've been before, but in London. And the host was basically like, how many of you lot are here because Co-op Live is, I don't know what's actually gone on, but
yeah, I mean, it's just right royal mess.
What is it? So it's a music venue.
Yeah, it's a new music venue. I think part of the pros of it is I think it's meant to be a lot more sustainable, so I've heard. It's meant to be the largest one in Manchester, at least, I know for sure. I think,
and it's that co-op, like the...
Yeah, it's the co-op live arena, so it is co-op that are in charge of it. Oh, and like, just like it's like AO arena, yeah, it's like co-op arena. I think it's going to be the largest one. I think the figure is 23,000, I want to say in the 20,000. Oh. So it's going to be the largest in Manchester, at least. So there's been so much hype around it. It's been coming for a long time.
I didn't even know it was coming. I didn't know.
I knew it was coming. I didn't know that it was going to be now until I saw, obviously, it was meant to be Peter Kay, who was meant to be opening it, I think, the beginning of the month or in April. Yeah, it was in April, I think. He was meant to be the...
I nearly swore then, but for the biggest arena in Manchester, surely he could have got someone a little bit...
Well, no, people love Peter Kay, don't they? And I think he's like... Well, if you're talking about comedians, I think people in the UK, like, he is revered in that sense, isn't he?
Right. I don't know, maybe it's just my frame of cultural reference.
Yeah, I think that's definitely... Do you remember when we were in primary school and they did the... what's it called? Is this the way to Amarillo?
Oh, right! Yeah, is that him?
Yeah, I mean, I did watch that back the other day and it had Jimmy Savile in it. I was like,
That did not age well.
Yeah, it did not age well at all. God. But, yeah, fun memories there. Anyway, he was meant to be opening it, and I think it is like, I don't know whether it's his farewell tour or something, but I know it was like, it's very big. It's like, lots of people are excited for it and whatever. And then obviously it got cancelled and cancelled again, and I think he was just like, what the F is going on? And then it got cancelled so much that then he was stated to be the ninth act that was opening it. And instead, I guess who became... Who was going to be the opening act of the Co-op Live Arena?
Who?
A Boogie with a Hoodie.
I was just about to say, so my sister messaged on the group chat like 2 days ago saying, I just walked past a Boogie.
Really?
And I didn't know any of this. And then I went on like online and then I was like, oh, he was supposed to play this show. Like, wait. No, it was on TikTok and it was a bunch of like 18-year-olds being like, fuming.
Yeah.
I said well, that, didn't I?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So... First of all, obviously no, like, disservice to Boogie with a Hoodie. It's just obviously, like you were saying about Peter Kay, I feel the same way about Boogie with a Hoodie in the sense that the opening of a grand arena, I'm sure, like, he and his music are great, but at the same time...
I thought it could have been someone better.
No, I think they would have probably wanted that to be, and obviously they did. They wanted it to be Peter Kay because they know that his audience is, like, I would say, larger than a Boogie with a Hoodie in terms of the UK population, at least. Anyway, A Boogie with a Hoodie was meant to open it on, I think it was either Wednesday or Thursday. People were literally queuing up outside, ready to go in. It was all fine. And they got told before, they were lining up outside, and then they literally got told at the door, like, sorry, like, the gig's cancelled. And I believe the reason why it got cancelled is jealous. Because an air conditioning unit fell. That's what
crazy.
I've heard. And, I mean, me and Mianka were discussing it, and we were like, that's actually so bad, because imagine if that had happened like a couple of hours later. Because if that hadn't happened, then supposedly...
They wouldn't have known that it was faulty or that, you know, something was wrong.
Yeah. Or if it hadn't happened then, I think they would have just gone in. And
like, the assurance that everything is fine should have been in the fact that you've built it right, not in the fact that nothing has fallen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the main thing with all of this in the first place, is I'm like, you know that this is like... This is a major responsibility to have. You're building an arena that's like the largest in Manchester. Any space where you're putting loads of human bodies from like tragedies in the past, such as Hillsborough, stuff like that, you know how much responsibility you have in terms of like making sure that people feel safe and also are safe when they come to these venues. And the fact that this seems like an afterthought rather than it being... years of preparation as it has been, I don't understand how we've got to the actual opening of it. Like, fair enough, I think they, like, if you'd organized it and you're like a couple of weeks before, like, oh, like, let's make the final touches now, like, we've left this time. But the fact that you've got to the point where gigs are actually happening and having to be cancelled because of these safety features are really
it's not a good look, is it?
It's really not. And like you say, there is some comedy in it, in terms of the it was a GCSE student, like you say, so like what, 15, 16 year olds being interviewed, and it's this girl and she's like, we've got our GCSEs next week. This was our last chance at freedom. And we really We're really annoyed. You can tell she was going to say something worse. Funny. And then she was like...
It's like when KFC ran out of chicken. Like, it's just so funny the things that like people will be up in arms about. And it's like, wow, you don't really have no real problems in life. Like, that's so lovely.
Instead, it's like, I've had it's to so go cute. To AO Arena instead yeah. of Burger King. But I mean, that's what's been happening as well. It's been kind of amusing to see that some gigs have been transferred to AO Arena. And it's kind of like, it's embarrassing, I think.
I wonder how they're going to salvage that reputation now.
And I know obviously we're like kind of making fun of like people's problems, but I do feel bad also. Obviously, concerts, the amount that they cost these days and how much people look forward to them. I feel bad for people like obviously like Olivia Rodrigo concerts. I don't think they've even been rescheduled. I think they've just been cancelled full stop. So obviously people are really sad about that.
She's a big artist as well, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what really upsets me as well is the fact that these big artists, they're going to remember Manchester for now.
Yeah.
And just like, don't like that.
That rubbish arena.
Yeah. Which hasn't, I don't know. I think what they should do now really is just cancel everything until they are absolutely sure that the venue is okay. Safe. And then start announcing stuff again. Because people pointed out as well, especially in Manchester, it's been less than 10 years since we had a really tragic event happen at an arena in Manchester. This is really not putting forward the feeling that people are feeling safe and looked after
like
at
they
want
to come to Manchester for a gig. Yeah.
It's just, Co-op. Yeah, Bianca was like, boycott co-op.
Get your act together.
The funniest thing, though, she said that, and we were actually in Warrington at the time, like, for my dad's birthday, and we just came out the house, and then it was like one of my dinner ladies was walking past, so I was already, like, trying to avoid eye contact.
Why?
Because I was just like, I can't be bothered, like, smiling and stuff. But also, she works at the co-op, and she was wearing a uniform, and then Bianca was like, boycott co-op, and I was just like, no.
You took that boycott real personally.
I know.
Ran away from her.
But yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, I say fingers crossed as in I hope, but like it shouldn't be like a thing that we're hoping for. They need to sort this out. Like people need to.
I mean, they will obviously if they've like spent this much money on building this huge, massive landmark arena. Like obviously they will just sort it out, won't they?
Yeah.
It's just interesting.
Yeah. I mean, staying in Manchester for the next thing to discuss. I mean, obviously, a clip has also gone relatively viral on socials of a bus journey or attempted bus journey that happened in Manchester. In the video, and I think the video has been posted by, I think it's by a pro-Israeli account that's posted it. And basically, a British-Israeli person gets onto a bus. They see that the bus driver is wearing, as well as a seemingly LGBTQ plus lanyard, a lanyard that also has boycott the Israeli apartheid with the Palestinian flag on it as well. And throughout this, like, it's a 2-minute video, and this person basically starts questioning the bus driver, saying, are you allowed to wear that at your place of work? You shouldn't be doing that.
She's not saying, are you allowed? She's saying, you're not allowed. Yeah. She's telling him, you're not allowed.
She's claiming that she is intimidated and triggered by this lanyard.
Guys, it just gets... Sorry, Carlos. Yeah.
No, but it's the fact that within 10, 20 seconds of each other, they read out the... your thing says boycott Israeli apartheid. I am intimidated or triggered by that. And I just sat with that and I was like, okay, so which part of the apartheid bit are you
it
like
offends
feeling,
you so much?
Like,
that whole interaction. So usually I don't watch things like that because I'm just going to speak honestly. Like if I can't fight her. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't fight her. I can't actually go find this woman and fight her. So, like,
it just... With words.
So it annoys me to sit and, like, listen to it. Do you know what I mean? But, like, I did watch this video and it just gets progressively worse. She comes on and she's
really
first
does.
Putting him on the spot. Guys, how can she get to a point where she then says to him, well, do you condemn Hamas? Deacon Hamas. And it's like, is this where we're at? And it's insane because she just keeps saying to him, you're not allowed to wear that. You're not allowed to wear that. I find that very intimidating. It's going to intimidate your characters, your customers, sorry. You're not allowed to wear political beliefs. Why are you showing your political beliefs at work? You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. Like, she's telling him.
Yeah. And it's the fact that I think the bit that kind of took it to the next level was where she said, oh, I feel intimidated or triggered by that. And I think his response was, I think he kept on saying, like, which I think is the correct response, is I'm not going to have this discussion, because I think is the correct thing to do.
That was, I felt really bad for him, because she was actually the one intimidating him. Like, if you watch the video and you see the dynamics between them, he was silent for the vast majority of the interaction, apart from intermittently just responding to say, I'm not going to have this discussion with you. Like, she was very, very clearly, like, intimidating him. It was kind of like watching a bully. Like, it's that kind of dynamic where she's just going on and on and on and on.
Glass between them, to be
honest. Like, she was just going on and on and on and on and on, and just, like, really putting him under fire. And you could tell he was getting extremely uncomfortable. You could tell he was feeling intimidated. And, like, he's not saying anything. He did handle that situation well, because
I think we've had discussions before about people being allowed, like, when someone got told to take off their Palestine badge at work and whatever, and we've given forward the arguments for why people should be allowed to express their political or the thing is, it's not even a political belief. It's like,
so
a
this
humanitarian
is the thing, right?
Belief.
So, and like, this is the thing, right? Like, this woman has not come forward and had a problem with this on the basis of, like, oh, there should be a uniform policy where we don't express any political beliefs. It's the fact that he is very decisively pro-Palestine, which she sees as obviously oppositional to what her own beliefs are, because he's also wearing an LGBTQ lanyard. And it's like, well, is that not...
Yeah, exactly.
Because by the way, if we're going to say that Palestinian liberation is a matter of political belief, when actually I just believe it's a humanitarian right, the same way that I believe, like, LGBTQ rights are, you know, a matter of humanitarianism, why she decided to politicize one and not the other?
Exactly.
Like, you know, so, like, that's not your objection with him wearing it. It's not based on, you know, kind of a standard of a code of conduct, but your own subjectivity.
But I think the bit which it went to another level was when, so she kept on saying, like, oh, like, I feel, like, I'm triggered or intimidated.
Oh,
by
get
that.
Off then, bro. It's a 192. It comes every 10 minutes.
The thing is as well, so she said that, and then one of the things that he did say was, I've been at demonstrations and I've been with Jewish people, and they've expressed the same thing. And as soon as he said that, he was like, oh, you've got Jewish friends. They all say that, don't they? Just like in the 50s, how people were racist and said that they had black friends. I was just like,
why are you bringing them into it? Yeah. You know, it's like I think she knows that she has, like, really no leg to stand on, that she's trying to draw parallels with another big, like, human rights issue, and trying to be like, we're the same or whatever, I don't know, like, trying to use the gravity of one to highlight the gravity of another. But that whole, do you know what I just think? Yeah, when I see things like this, and also it's kind of like, it was so much entitlement. Like, that's all I see. Like, I don't actually see it as, like, a justified political stance. I don't truly, if I'm going to be honest, like, by the way, like, we've spoken a lot about anti-Semitism and how it is a real issue. And, like, obviously there has been statistics to show that it is on the rise. And, I completely understand that, you know, Jewish people, when they're out in public, of course, they'll fear anti-Semitism and stuff like that. I don't think the presence of a Palestinian liberation is anti-Semitic. I don't think that inherently means that a Jewish person has to feel intimidated, you know? Like, having seen that interaction and understanding that her sole problem with this man was only that he was wearing a Palestine lanyard. It wasn't that he'd said anything to her or treated her any kind of way. He was only wearing a Palestinian lanyard
with the words boycott Israeli.
I can't fathom how that would make someone feel intimidated. I personally would hazard that she was just entitled.
Well, this is it. I think it not intimidated, more just, what's it called, aggravated.
Exactly. I think she was more aggravated, but it's like, everyone has a right to
Exactly.
It sounds so basic to their own political opinion.
Also, I'm just kind of thinking, taking it all in terms of the whole, oh, back in the 50s, everyone was like, oh, my friend's black. Let's just rewind that. I really don't think in the 50s people were going around saying
I've got a black friend. In the 50s, they were going around bloody lynching them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
they were proudly professing that they were racist. Like, so historically, that's inaccurate.
Yeah.
Besides the point. So then as soon as he said that, she went on down that line. It just got progressively worse, to the point that she also proudly stated at one point, I think Jewish people would have a problem with that because the majority of Jewish people are Zionists. And
yeah,
it's like, that's not your status to make. And also,
politics now? So what you've done now, you've taken this from an issue of like, oh, safety, to an issue of political difference.
Yeah.
Like, the issue isn't that, oh, I feel like you're going to hurt me or you're going to treat me badly. The issue is that I'm a Zionist and I disagree with this stance. Like, you've just exposed yourself here. Mm.
This is the thing. You just kept on kind of getting more and more into it. And it was also, again, the fact that the lanyard was there as well. It's like things just kept on presenting themselves that were just like, it's really...
You know, when I watch these videos, like, I'm so serious. When I watch these videos, I think, I wish someone would try me like that. Like, why does this stuff never happen to me? I would love for it to happen to me. I would love for someone to come to me and try chat to me in that way. I would love it.
Well, I think we also need to say that when we say that, Halima wants people to just chat to her, we're also wary of the fact that some of these people that do go and do this are quite dangerous, and especially with what's happened in the last week. Like, we're not looking for...
I'm talking about myself.
Yeah.
Come and chat to me. Talk to me. That's what I'm saying. I watch these videos, I swear to God, and I think, like, what, you lot don't have hands? Sorry, I'm not inciting anything.
Hands to sign language, if need be.
I'm not inciting anything at all. Yes. But I'm just saying, like, I think that people kind of, what I've noticed in my life, yeah, because a lot of my, like, female friends and family members will come and they'll have certain interactions with people in public. And I do think, like, how come I never have those interactions? And I do think that people like that woman, they target people who they perceive to be a bit more vulnerable, or who they know that they can kind of maybe exert entitlement, authority over, you know? Yeah. And I think that man, he looked very scared. I'm not going to lie. Like, he did look very... in that situation, like, as I say, he was the one that was being intimidated. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just insane as well that she was trying to tell him, oh, you're not allowed, you're not allowed. Like, sorry, yeah, are you like the lead policymaker at Stagecoach?
Also said that he has a white savior complex. I'm just like, you can't just throw around that term whenever
white people decide
to show solidarity with something that you don't agree with.
It's crazy. And you know what's actually insane as well is that they, a different account, like, exposed who this woman was. And if it's true, from what I've seen, like, if that is the case, she's white. She's literally white. By the way, white being a racial category that is a visual exercise, like, people of different ethnicities can also be white. So, like, yeah, she says she's Israeli, but she's also white.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, that's crazy.
The thing that, like, again, really made me feel quite upset when I was looking at this.
Oh, I wish I was there.
Well, it was again towards the end, and it really, like, it just got worse and worse, and towards the end she really showed her true colours, and she literally just point blank started saying, oh, you're wearing, you're a terrorist sympathiser, and you are wearing a terrorist flag.
That's it. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the thing is as well, like, if you're gonna make the
So now it's a stance. Like, you're taking a political stance. Like, so this is a political conversation it's not a matter of safety.
If you're gonna associate Hamas's actions with terrorism, and he was wearing a lanyard with the Hamas flag on, then I could maybe understand that.
Yeah,
but
the
fact he was wearing a Palestinian flag.
Yeah.
How can you say that's a terrorist flag?
Yeah, but again, it just goes, there's so many holes in her logic. It just goes to show, like, I really don't think that it was a matter of safety for her. Obviously, I understand, for other Jewish people, yes, anti-Semitism is a very real threat. But in that situation, having seen that interaction, I don't think it was a matter of safety. I think she was trying to exert her own political authority over this man, simply because, as Carla said, she was aggravated by the fact that he was showing Palestinian solidarity and she's a Zionist, which is just abhorrent, the fact that you could come on and speak to anyone in that way. Like, I actually wouldn't, honestly speaking, like, if I saw a Zionist on the street, I vehemently oppose their political views. I would never in my life presume to go up to them, especially when they're at their place of work, and impose my own will and authority over them. You know, like, there's just, have some manners. Like, it's just mannerless. But yeah, I don't know. That was just crazy entitlement. And but to be fair, I think, like, obviously I saw it on Twitter, and to be fair, like, all the responses were people adding Stagecoach to be like, hey, like, he's a brilliant, you know, worker. Like, he handled the situation well. Like, you know, he deserves credit.
And again, I really would hope that Stagecoach don't respond to this in the way that, oh yeah, he shouldn't be wearing it. Because this is the same Stagecoach in, like, Transport for Manchester that were, like, literally parading the Ukrainian flag, like, 2 years ago. So how can you turn around and, like, pick and choose like that? Like,
but that woman is relying on the fact that there are double standards in British society, and that, you know, something like, you know, Palestinian liberation or Palestinian support is so politicized in a way where, as she so flagrantly said, it's associated with terrorism. You know, like I said, she didn't have a problem with the LGBTQ lanyard. Stagecoach themselves have paraded Ukrainian flags, but that's the problem, you know.
Yeah. I just don't know. I don't understand, like, how you... Because the thing is, that video has gone viral because she has provided it to this pro-Israeli account on Twitter. I'm just like, how can you watch that back and think, you know what?
Not have self-awareness to be like, I'm overdoing it a bit.
You know, he's like, you know what? I'm going to send that.
Yeah.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
It's self-delusion. Like,
it is. It is. And it's, yeah, I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's a shame as well, obviously, happening in Manchester as well. But
yeah, I felt really bad for that bus driver, honestly speaking. I felt really bad for him. Like, she just, that whole interaction was just awful. Like, no one should be talking to anyone in that way. Like, honest to God.
Yeah. And like Kalima said as well, we obviously condemn all forms of anti-Semitism. And, like, we recognise there has been a rise in anti-Jewish hate since October the 7th, but this is not the battle to be picking.
Exactly. Like, I really, like, if you haven't watched it, go watch it, and you know exactly what we mean. Like, it was a matter of her own political opinion and authority in that situation.
Yeah. Right. What should we move on to next? Let's go away from Manchester and go to the UK in general. Again, let's do something a little bit less serious first.
Go on.
You hear about Boris Johnson?
No, what?
So, obviously, Boris Johnson was Prime Minister, and in 2022, he brought in the Elections Act, which, part of which said that the UK was going to require voters to provide photo ID when they vote. Fast forward to the elections on Thursday, Boris Johnson turns up to vote, doesn't have his ID.
Oh my God, what a moron.
So he had to go home and get it and
he's
come back
just
again.
Boris Johnson is just such an interesting person, because we've spoken on the show before about how, like, he's obviously, you know, personally and as a kind of show, the stances that we take are very anti, like, Tory. I would say that's a fair thing to say, right?
The show,
you know, like, in our personal opinion, like, you know, that's kind of the stances that we take. And we've spoken very openly about how a lot of Boris Johnson's policies and things that he's said and things that he's put out there have been very, very harmful and bad. And we've spoken also about how, well, I personally think something that's so dangerous about him is that he parades under this masquerade of being like a silly, goofy person. And I'm like, well, he's actually not, because when you look at kind of how things that he says and things that he does, he's actually very dangerous. But then things like this happen and I'm like, wow, why is he so goofy?
Yeah.
Like, why is he so, like, he's just such a ridiculous character.
It's like you're kind of like kicking someone and your foot goes all the way around and kicks you in the backside.
Yeah. You just can't really take him seriously, can you?
No. Well, I mean, obviously when this act first got brought in, the UK's Electoral Commission and also a lot of advocacy groups did criticise it, because they said that it was basically going to disenfranchise a lot of the voting population. Particularly in a general election, and they also pointed out that a lot of these voters are more likely to be poorer, from minority ethnic backgrounds, and disabled.
Yeah.
Also, they were statistically less likely to be voting for the Tories.
Right.
However, since then as well, Jacob Rees-Mogg has come out and said that actually it was a bit of a silly decision, because they admitted that they did bring this in order to manipulate future elections
so that it would be in their favour.
He said they did it to gerrymander, which apparently means manipulate. I've never heard of that word. He admitted that it was actually a silly decision, because what it actually has happened has meant that the older people who come to vote are forgetting their ID. So it's actually backfired and affected the Conservatives, because lots of older people are turning up. So.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Mm, exactly.
God, goodness.
So
I can't believe this is the state of UK politics, honest to God. Like, these men are trying to do, like, evil genius Dr. Doofenshmirtz Gru type of nonsense, and they're so stupid that it's literally egg on their face.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. This is the people that are running this country.
The thing is, you say you can't believe it, but I can.
No, I can't. Yeah, I can't. I can't believe it. I'm lying. I absolutely can't believe it. I'm just disappointed.
If you're just tuning in, welcome. This is Mango Masala, the South Asian Show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima.
Hey guys.
Can you stop texting, please?
Sorry. I'm trying to multitask.
I just can't get the staff these days.
Wow. Mm. Guys, I'm still present. I'm here.
That is true. You know what? On a scale of Halima to being present today, you've been more present, so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I'll take what I can get.
Thank you very much. It is actually really warm in the studio.
Yeah, you were laughing at me. Remember
all
an hour
sudden,
ago?
All of a sudden, like, it's just got really warm.
You were laughing at me and my towel material and shorts, but to be fair, you're not like you're overdressed, so it's fine.
I'm wearing just like a small t-shirt.
Yeah, to be fair, that's knitted material, that's gonna feel hot.
I'm not complaining. I love warm weather. Yeah. I love feeling warm. I'm just thinking about what I'm gonna eat today.
Same.
What are you gonna eat today?
I'm gonna go home and make some fajitas.
What, chicken, beef, prawn?
Chicken.
Yeah.
You've made prawn fajitas?
Well, people like prawn tacos, don't they? Like shrimp tacos.
I need to do that. I've never had that before.
No, we always have. We like with my family, we have Mexican nights like very frequently, where we'll just do like loads of fillings and like loads of sides, like all the sauces and the salsas and the mango salads and stuff like that. Have like hard tacos, soft shell tacos, and then just everyone just, oh, it's so good. It's one of my favorite things to do.
I don't doubt that your house like does that, because
we'd be eating good in my house, guys.
Exactly.
Good. Well, my little sister has a secret Snapchat story where she just documents what we eat in our house every day. Diet in my household is impossible, let me just say that.
The thing is, like, you're saying, oh, we eat good, and I'm like, I like what's it called, as a external extra, whatever. When you eat good, I eat good.
I do be supplying Carlos.
Yes, through the Tupperware.
Well, if I come round this week for a pre-record for next week, you can pick something and I'll make it.
Wow, that's even more intensive to do it.
Love to feed people. I just love feeding people.
The thing is, you say that, but it took you like 2 years to actually feed me or anything.
Because I didn't come round for ages, though, did I? Like, to record. Yeah. That's why.
Anyway, I remember one time, did you bring something to the studio? And I was just like, okay. I think I was just like so taken aback, because I was just like, oh, you've actually brought something.
Maybe, yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah. We've been doing it for so long now.
I know. Yeah. We've been doing this show for so long.
Yeah, I know.
Is it 3.5 years?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Well, coming up to it, because it'll be December. So we're nearly in June.
That is insane. Oh, God, why is time going so quick,
Well,
guys?
I mean, more like, than that. Here. It's now less than a month to my 1 year anniversary.
Yeah. That's insane. Yeah. June 4th, 5th, 6th?
3rd.
3rd.
Yeah.
3rd.
Close enough.
It was that week. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's weird because me and Mayanka, all of our... My birthday is October, hers is February, got Valentine's Day in February, our getting together anniversary is in September, and then obviously you got Christmas like around that as well.
Also, you got something nice in the middle.
Yeah, there was always a big gap between her birthday in February and then our anniversary in September, but now we've got a wedding anniversary in June, it's nice to have something to...
like celebrate. Yeah. Oh, how are you going to celebrate? Do you have any idea? Or is it a surprise?
I don't know. I really like the idea because, you know, like, each year is a material.
Yeah.
Like, first year is paper. I think my uncle was very disappointed that I think it's 60 years as diamond. She was like, I'm not waiting 60 years
of marriage. How old would we be? 80? My God.
But regardless, I really like the idea of taking that and putting your own spin of it. So obviously first year is paper, so doing something of a spin on, like, something paper related.
Oh,
like,
that's kind of cute. I think no, that's really cool. Nice, actually.
Creative. Yeah. I think she's not that impressed. She's like, I want to make our own. But I'm like, I like sticking to the stuff and just making your own spin on it. Because then otherwise you could just literally, she can be like, all right, second year, diamond, there we go. Like, it's going to get out of control. And I don't have money to be buying any more diamonds anytime soon, so...
Yeah. Anymore. Gosh, you got the one that buys me anchor.
I was talking about the one on her finger, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
I thought you were calling her a diamond.
No, well, yeah, true say. She's a diamond.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Back to the depressing stuff. And you know what? This has been such a Bad Vibes episode, Bad Vibes Island episode, that I think... For the first time in Mango Masala history, we're going to play it twice. And maybe I'll redeem myself.
Oh, my God. Here no, Carlos, go. Please no.
Bad Vibes Island.
How was that?
It was much better than the first one because you was a bit more gentle. With the first one, you were just a bit very abrasive.
You know what I did there? I turned it down a little so I could actually hear myself.
So you could hear yourself. That's what, you know what it is? It's so true. Like, when you've got headphones in or, like, say you're in the car and, like, the music is really loud and you can't really hear yourself, you will never be more tone deaf.
And you'll be thinking, I sound so good right now.
Like, I'm not going to lie. I think, okay, so basically I am, like, notoriously tone deaf. I actually am. Like, everyone will say this to you. And recently I've been kind of, because I sing a lot, like I just be singing in and around the house just all the time, and like I've kind of noticed myself being a little bit in tune recently. I don't know what's going on. And I was in the car with my sister the other day, who, like, she actually can sing, and like I was singing something and she was like, whoa, hang on, wait, did you just hit that note?
You're going through this new chapter of you, like, achieving what other people view as very basic things.
Oh, whatever! No, but whatever! It's
like, no, I'm actually pointing this out.
Come see hater!
No, but I'm like, what is going on? Because, like, you're suddenly being able to do all these things. Like,
oh, what that everyone else just couldn't do. All right, Carlos. Well, who knows where this, you know, journey might take me. Today it's a note. Tomorrow it's a whole song.
We'll be playing you on Mango Masala.
We might. We just might. I don't need any more encouragement.
Yeah,
really.
Please, no. well, speaking of not needing any encouragement, the UK has wasted no time since the Rwanda bill came in last week or the week before, whatever it was. They've already started detaining the first sets of people that they are planning to deport to Rwanda. And I think the thing that stuck out with us, I think it was Simran that sent it, on the chat earlier this week, was the fact that the Home Office literally posted it on their socials. They actually took...
They did like a whole like advertisement campaign. Well, so like campaign.
There's so many different levels to it, right? First of all, the fact that they took cameras with them because they were like, oh, these are going to be the first people that we want to deport to Rwanda, so let's make sure we get it on camera. So first of all, there's the element of getting it on camera. Then there's the element of actually editing it together to this 30-second clip, which they've put this really eerie, like, positive stock music over that's just like wee music, like dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, where whilst what they're doing is actually a very traumatic thing.
It's so dystopian. Like...
And the thing that irritated me the most was at the end, they closed the van and they've added like a prison like lock sound to it over it. Like,
goodness,
and it's
goodness,
just like,
gracious me. I haven't watched, I don't have the capacity to watch the video. I haven't watched it. I'm not going to watch it. I just know that it will arouse feelings in me that I actually can't do anything about because, like I said, I can't go and fight these people. So I haven't watched it, but, like, I obviously understand the kind of, like, the premise of what's happened here. And like Carlos said, like, it is so depraved in so many ways. The thing that really strikes me is that on this show, we have spoken time and time again about this bill. We've been kind of really tracking the progress of this bill, and we have only ever had one reception, which is that this is completely abhorrent. And you would kind of assume that anyone with any semblance of, like, humanity would be able to see just how depraved this is. And then you see something like what they've put out there and you realise, hang on a minute, there are actually people out there who really think they've done a great thing here.
This is the thing.
There are people who really, really think that, like, Like we've said before, Rishi Sunak clearly wants to make this his like landmark policy.
Yeah.
This is something that he is proud of. He has created a whole media campaign around it.
And the thing is, there's no smoke without fire as well. Like, they put this out knowing that it's at least going to resonate with some people. So there
good
are
good or bad. Well, good or bad, to be honest with you. Like, but yeah, no, you're right. Like, it's not just the government. It's like they are doing it to appease however, you know, whatever demographic, whatever section of society that are going to be like, you know what, that's a good job, that.
And
that's
a job
well done.
Obviously, we're aware now that these elections have happened now. The next big election we're going to see is going to be the general election. And I think, like, Rishi is very keen, from what we can see, to make this his legacy. I think there's also an awareness that this is one of the only things that they can really jump on to, like, get votes, like, at this point in time. Like, okay, like, we've really made a bad name for ourselves in regards to everything with all the COVID mess when people voted
for us.
This
is our redemption.
This is the one thing we can do that will actually get the people that are not happy with us over COVID to be like, well, at least they'll get the foreigners out.
Like, and it's just so, like, the optics of it just really reinforces how, like, racism and xenophobia is aestheticized in this country. Like, it's so blatant. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's literally, it's such a rudimentary optic where it's like somebody is, they're literally going into these people's homes and just locking them up in the back of a van. And it's like, it literally can't get any more, as I say, rudimentary than that. And it's like, still, it's not kind of ringing alarm bells in people's head. Like, hang on a minute, this is a human being. Maybe this is wrong. Like, we're actually going and, like, picking up this human being and just and forcefully transporting them into the back of a van to transport them now to a country that they have absolutely no business being in. Maybe this isn't right.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's how much more blatant can the optics of it be? Like, you're picking this person up like they're a toy, like they're an object. They've got no autonomy. They've got no agency in the situation. They are completely helpless. They're so vulnerable. You know, and it's like, how are you okay? How can you watch that and not feel like a very, very deep existential, like, discomfort?
Yeah.
That at this very blatant display of, like, power dynamic and power abuse, even, you know? It's just, I don't know. It's just so disgusting. It's actually just, as I say all the time, like, there's many ways to intellectualize this, but it is so disgusting. God.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that people can do is, I've seen a lot of things being posted on social media about anti-immigration raid groups that people can join, depending on where you are across the country. If you, like, follow those accounts or message them to join, then basically I think what it is and we've seen that this has happened and worked in the past.
Yeah.
People come together when they know a raid is happening and they do intervene. People know their rights, let them know that they don't need to say anything, they don't need to go anywhere, whatever. And we've seen that it has actually worked and it has prevented people from being detained and removed from this country. Like we say, like they're nothing.
Yeah.
If you go on online, I'm sure you can find the relevant group for where you live. And, yeah, that's something you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just disgusting that this is where we're at. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's also like, because the thing is that, like, this has received so much backlash, like, from a legal perspective, from a kind of social political perspective, like, it has received so much backlash. If you have, as we spoke about on the show last week, overturned so many international laws to be able to do this anyway, have to, like, at least be a little bit ashamed. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't, you are aware of how much, like, you, how many laws and morals that you are overstepping in it to do this. Like, be a little bit embarrassed. Do you know what I mean? Like, find shame. God, don't parade the fact that... Download shame. You know, like, don't parade the fact that, hey, look at me. Look at how immoral I am. You know, look at how illegal this is.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. I mean, we don't say that without, reason as well. This is literally internationally legal on so many
it's not an
levels.
Opinion it's not actually an opinion that is, like, objectively factually, like, we should all be terrified if this is where we are as a society.
Well, I think that segues, I want to say nicely, but it's not nice, into the next topic, in terms of people proudly displaying their amoral beliefs and tendencies. I think everyone will be aware that, sadly, earlier this week, I think it was on Wednesday, it was basically midweek last week, a person carried out a series of stabbings in near London, I think it was, and I think around four people were injured, and one of them sadly did die, a 14-year-old Daniel Anduren. And I think it was even more sad, like, when his picture got released, I was just like, you're a child.
He's actually,
like,
a baby.
Not that, like, obviously 14-year-old is a child, but, like, seeing his face and everything is...
He's literally a baby, like...
Yeah. I mean, it's a really, like, sad coincidence as well that he also came... He went to the same school that Grace O'Malley Kumar went to, who was one of the people who sadly lost their lives in the Nottingham attack last year. So it's a really, really sad coincidence there. We're not going to go into anything regarding the knife attack or any, like, speculation about that, because the perpetrator is still alive and, criminal proceedings are ongoing. But one thing that we did want to talk about in regards to people being amoral and stuff is the way in which this has been reported on, particularly by one institution that, in our opinion, doesn't really cause that much surprise. So obviously this attack happened, I think it happened on Wednesday, and then I think if you haven't gone to what we're talking about the way that the newspaper The Sun has covered this incident. So on the 1st of May, they had a front page that was dedicated completely towards the stabber. It was just a picture of him, and it was like, knife.
Front page, like.
Yeah, front part, knife attack, like, happened, like, blah, 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 whatever. Fast forward to the day after, and so this is on Thursday, and the front page is, the main feature is that Alexander Trent Arnold is dating, sorry, not you can tell I don't watch football enough. Trent Alexander-Arnold is dating Jude Law's daughter, apparently. So that's what the main spread is. And then you see this little bit in the left, which is a picture of Daniel Anduren. And the title of this segment reads, Family's Tribute to Sword Lad.
Guys, 40. I can't even tell you. Like, you think that you kind of get used to, like, this British strain of racism, and then you see something like that and it boils you from your inside. Like, it made me, like, so angry to the point where, like, it broke my heart, because it's like, this is from every single angle a tragedy. The fact that somebody lost their life, the fact that it was a little boy, you know, the fact that he was on his way to school, your parents have just sent you off to school. And that's it. Their little boy is gone, you know, like, in such a vicious, violent way. So defenseless, like, he's literally a baby. And then the fact that The Sun have not only made that front news as a tribute to the boy, where they have previously made the attacker front news, but the fact that they have now made it a teeny little kind of, they've given it very tiny real estate. And then the nail on the coffin, they have referred to this poor boy as Sword Lad.
Exactly. And when I saw that, I thought, sure, okay, let's give them some benefit of the doubt. Maybe the past tense of being stabbed is sword in something. I looked up, it's nothing. It is,
they
literally
have
there
named
it.
Him Sword Lad because he was killed by a sword. It's like, there's just so many things that I can say about this that I'm kind of like, I don't even know where to start. To firstly, like, reduce someone down to a misnomer, like, to reduce someone down to a label in that way, and also but then to refer to them in a way by which they were killed, is so insensitive. It's like you have completely dehumanized this little boy. Like, you haven't named him. Like, you haven't... Like, Sword Lad.
Yeah, it's just like a little bit... they've got a picture of him, and a little bit under there, they've got, quote, well-loved, Daniel.
Like, my head is actually... I'm not even joking. My head is actually spinning right now, like, thinking about this.
For me, I think, aside... Because I think, obviously, you're right, it is insensitive. But the main thing that I get from that when I read that is, if I didn't know what happened and I read family's tributes to Sword Lad...
I thought he would be the
exactly.
Perpetrator.
You assign that because Sword Lad...
He is not a Sword Lad. He was not brandishing the sword. He was murdered by the sword. Like, by the way, for those of you who aren't aware, he's a little black boy. Like, this obviously now will make sense. Like, this is why he was treated like this. It is very, very, very well documented the way that black people and, you know, specifically black men and black boys are kind of like... completely dehumanized in, like, you know, the public sphere. And this is just such a flagrant, like, blatant example of that, where he literally is so dehumanized to the point where they don't even, not only do they not bother naming him in full, like in the actual, you know, headline, but the fact that they now frame him as Sword Boy is kind of like this implicit, if no one else knew what the story was, this implicit kind of assumption or, you know, understanding that he was the one brandishing the sword. It was his sword. Which is like, he is a victim. He is nothing but a victim.
The thing is as well, we've also got, in order to provide a comparison, like I said before, it's a very sad coincidence that the Daniel actually went to the same school that Grace O'Malley Kumar went to, who was one of the victims of the Nottingham attack last year. And when that attack happened, I've actually got the picture of that. And it's very much they got a whole double spread of the two victims.
Yeah, I mean, like, as they should,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, it's, again, a tragedy. But it's, like, the fact that he got a tiny piece of that front page.
And their title is Knifed to Death in Rampage. Two students, 19 killed.
It's just abhorrent. It's just abhorrent. And it's just kind of feeding again into this kind of reality where... Black people are completely dehumanized and completely stripped of their humanity and their dignity in, you know, so much of the British media.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I had hiccups there. But, yeah, like, where they are just, as I say, completely stripped of their humanity. It's not... This kind of reporting doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists in the wider context of... racism, and particularly, you know, a very British strain of racism, and I am actually just appalled. I'm truly appalled, and I think that whoever wrote that headline, because it's not just one person, it has to pass through like editors and preachers and all of these things. So it's like a string of people who saw that and thought, you know what, that is actually all right. Like, as in, like, it points to a consensus, and the consensus here is that this poor defenseless baby who was murdered like, oh, actually, it's all right to report on him in this, in such like a cruel, callous, like dehumanizing way.
It's not okay. Yeah. In case you didn't get the memo.
Anyway, R.I.P. Daniel.
Yeah, it's so sad.
It's tragic. It's actually tragic. And honestly, like, my heart really goes out to, like, his family, his parents especially. Like, I can't ever imagine. Like, I've got a little sister that age, and, like, I just can't imagine, like... Oh my God, it's
That's the
awful.
Thing, when you're going through something that bad, you shouldn't be having to think about the way in which... the media is reporting.
That's the last thing that you need. Do you know what I mean? Like, what you need is, like, public sympathy and, like... Also, actually, I wanted to talk about what's going on in America with the...
Oh, yes, yes, sorry, yes. Sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah,
the Palestinian protest. No, I just wanted to say, like, obviously... At the minute, there have been a mass wave of what they're called, like, encampments, where it's basically students that are basically camping out on university premises and... are we recording? Okay, so basically, as I was saying, it's a wave of mass protests across, well, it kind of initially started in America, as far as I'm aware, where students are taking up camp on university premises, refusing to kind of leave in an act of protest. And their demands are that they want their universities to divest completely from any kind of Israeli investment and also to call for a permanent ceasefire, you know, in Palestine. And actually, it has been very extremely, like, it's been extremely disturbing because of the kind of reactions that the university staff, certain university staff have had, and also the police. Like, they have been in some to some degrees, like, quite brutal. There have been obviously footage of some students kind of being very rough. There have been footage I've seen of students, obviously a lot of them are wearing masks to conceal their identities, because unfortunately protesting for something as basic as human rights can sometimes cost you. So some of them have been wearing masks, and I've seen police literally rip off their masks, which I don't know if that's even legal or even allowed. There was one particular, something that was really, really, really like worrying to me, and it's, I think, I just want to get it right, but I think it is the, okay, so the there's a Columbia professor at Columbia University in America. There is a Columbia professor who leads an NYPD, so the police, the New York Police Division, intel division that maintains an office in Tel Aviv. So this, there is a Columbia professor who leads a police department that has an office in Tel Aviv. Like, let that one settle for a minute. Like, firstly, how is that allowed?
Yeah, when we're talking about, like, political, whatever, people should be allowed to display their political beliefs, when you put that in comparison to
a man wearing a lanyard, he's not, this man is under fire for wearing a lanyard, and yet at Columbia, one of the best global universities, you know, one of the most prestigious universities, this woman is this professor who is in charge of, you know, she has control and power over student welfare and students' future. This woman is leading an intel division at the police department that has an office in Tel Aviv, which, by the way, the implicit understanding here is that they will be collaborators of, like, the Israeli state and IDF, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't, you know? Why do they have an office in Tel Aviv?
Why do you think, like, you know?
No, but what reason is there to, if you're NYPD?
And so the police crackdown on the Columbia. So Columbia has been one of the kind of foremost universities doing this encampment. Like, they've done it, like, really big. They've come under a lot of media scrutiny. And this professor basically has led the crackdown on this. And it's absolutely insane to me. It's crazy to me that someone who has this much political affiliation is able to be in a position of being, like, a professor. That's in it, that, you know. Crazy to me. And actually, what's so funny about this, what is so ironic about this, is that there's been another situation where, I don't have it to hand, where it was another university that has suspended a Jewish professor who is, she is a professor of, like, anti-Semitic studies or something like that, or some kind of Jewish-related studies. They have, listen to this, this university has suspended this professor because she was protecting her Jewish students. So her Jewish students have been in protest. She has come out, and because there's also been examples of some professors that have been protecting their students, whether that's standing in front of them and things like that. This woman has specifically come out to protect her Jewish students, and that university have now suspended her for 6 months. Like, how insane? How absolutely insane? And it's like, all these Zionists that are crying about anti-Semitism, where are you now? Because that's a real life example of anti-Semitism. That's what that is an actual real life example of a woman coming forward to protect her Jewish students and now being suspended off campus on that very basis. Is that not anti- I'm bugging that's anti-Semitism.
I mean,
anyone would read it, as that.
It's a very like.
Yeah, we can't say for sure. Okay.
I can't even process this.
We can't say for sure, but like, you know, like.
It's a cause that these people should be getting like behind 100%. Like, rather than.
It's insane to me. It's actually crazy to me. It's so crazy to me. But that is kind of really what the state of affairs is in America right now. Like, it's insane. It's insane. But having said that, though, I do just want to say, like, it has been extremely inspiring to see these students. Like, it has been heart-touching. There have been times where I've sat there and I've cried watching the coverage from this. They are insanely brave. They are really paving the way for real, tangible change, because actually it has now been announced that Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, they, as a result of these protests, have become the first university in the US to fully divest from Israel. And what's kind of really touching about this story is that this was Rachel Corrie's school. So Rachel Corrie, for those of you who don't know, was an American woman who was killed by an Israeli bulldozer in the West Bank, somewhere in Palestine, because she was obviously protesting against the demolition of like Palestinian homes, and the Israeli bulldozer just killed her. You know, she was very staunchly pro-Palestine, and this was her university. You know, this was her alma mater, and they have been the first university to completely divest. So the fact of the matter is that these protests are working. They are making a difference, if anything, to keep a continued spotlight on Palestine, and they have kind of caused a ripple, international ripples. You know, in the UK now, there have been many similar encampments. We have seen in Leeds, in Manchester, you know, in Warwick, in Cambridge, like all over the UK, even as far as Japan. I've seen there's students in you know, universities in Japan that are doing a similar thing. So they are, to end it on kind of like a really positive note, like, I'm extremely proud. I stand in obviously complete solidarity with these students, that I am in awe of their bravery, of their resilience, of their steadfastness. And I just I hope that it kind of, you know, is the start of a wave of divestments from, you know, US universities.
I've told you I'm having my fajitas. What are you having for your dinner?
Well, so this is the thing. Now that we're not going on a hike, everyone's just going to come round to my house and we're just going to get food.
That's nice.
My sister's just said Grubfellas. Have you ever had it?
No.
No, I haven't either, but apparently the mac and cheese from there is good. But also, I am going to Longsat now to pick up some gold, so I might just get some food from there as well. But also, I've been really wanting to make these potato noodles that I keep seeing on TikTok. And I went and bought, like, potato starch the other day to make them. And I've been thinking about it a lot. So maybe
Actually making the noodles.
Yeah, from scratch. I'm going to make these noodles from scratch. I bought potato starch to make them. So, who knows? Who knows? Am I? Is this working? What is going on?
No, I think it is now.
Oh, okay.
Finally. Right. That. Cool. Right. Well, regardless,
thanks for tuning in, guys.
I'm sure you'll be eating something yummy tonight. But yeah, thank you for tuning in, everyone. We will see you next week. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.